Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I'm working my green screen now with the beautiful bay behind me. I'll be moving that around here. Don Moeller, I'm wowing you with all of my photos here. It's been a little while since we got together over in Catonsville and had State Fair and get together and talk with great local people and have some of that French press coffee and our friends at El Guapo, our friends at Fadley as well, are still serving those crab cakes, shipping them all over the country, also creating a space over in Catonsville. We appreciate the sponsors and our friends. We got to meet and spend a full day with the folks at the Maryland Hospital Association last year down in Annapolis. Don, how little we would know how much all of our lives would change by the next time we get together with Bob Atlas and friends, correct?
Remarkable, Nestor. I when I think we're coming up on 1 year for the shutdown, I said I don't think any of us will ever forget Friday the 13th, March 13th of 2020, that'll be etched in our brains forever. So it's been an amazing year, and we've got some guests that are going to catch us up to what's going on here.
Well, I'll tell you what, first things first, Bob, we met you last year down in Annapolis, and we were talking about things in the legislature, and we were talking about Kerwin then and other issues off of health and the industry itself and what was going to be necessary. This last year, I think every Marylander, every American has become familiar with the value, the work, and the role of hospitals and what health plays in our community, right?
Absolutely, sure. The good news, the bottom line is that our hospitals acquitted themselves tremendously well here in Maryland. Not only LifeBridge, represented here by Leslie Simmons, but everybody from Hopkins and UMS all the way down to the little community hospitals in the small towns. And, if you think back, you saw those headlines, those news stories of hospitals around the country being overwhelmed. Did you ever see a story of a Maryland hospital being overwhelmed? No, because we did really well in terms of maintaining the capacity and doing what we could to take care of people and save all those lives. We served 34,000 COVID inpatients over the span of the year, and many thousands more. Did over 1.2 million COVID tests in our Maryland hospitals, and now we're doing hundreds of thousands of vaccinations. So we're doing everything we can. And, it's a terrible scourge that's hit us. But I'd like to say we're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, and it is not the oncoming train.
I want to make sure we welcome Leslie Simmons in here. She's at Carroll Hospital, of course, with LifeBridge Health as well, in running a hospital. Don ran the county, and he ran my high school back when I was a youngster. The notion of the hospitals and the role that you all play, first thing, we've had a lot of miracle workers on here today and talking about the front lines, but managing this, hats off to you, and welcome. Good day to you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us. It's a pleasure to be here.
Leslie and Bob, you alluded to it. Maybe you both can talk about this from your different perspectives. Bob, you said we didn't see the awful pictures in Maryland that we saw nightly from other hospitals around the country. And you commented, you said, because we managed it well. For you and then for Leslie, what does that mean? I think folks might be listening and say, well, what does that mean? We managed it well. Why didn't other people manage it well? What's it look like to manage it well?
Well, it starts with getting ready. We saw it coming a little bit. The peak in Maryland was a little later than it was in places like Washington State and New York, but not so late that people all of a sudden got complacent like they did in some of the other states. We got ready, and about 6 weeks from the beginning, we hit our first peak, which was 1,700 plus inpatients in Maryland hospitals back in early May. And, that meant freeing up capacity, creating more capacity, getting staff ready, pulling in people from, who were retired or volunteered in a variety of ways, scrounging for personal protective equipment, everything that was needed. Leslie can probably give you some of the real tough stories that happened on the ground. By the way, you mentioned she's at Carroll Hospital. She's moved up in the world. She's chief operating officer for all of LifeBridge Health now.
Yes. Okay, so, Leslie, this is your show now. I mean, you're running the whole shebang. So take us inside and what you've learned and what you're seeing, and give our listeners a real sense of what it's like on the ground. I like the way Bob put that.
Yeah, so I have to tell you, Bob hit the nail on the head. We were able to learn by others that came before us. So Maryland being a little behind that surge really helped us have a peek in to what other states were dealing with. And I would have to say one of the biggest things that helped us was taking action early and not resting on our laurels. I mean, we saw what was happening at other states, and we did things very radical, like closed elective surgery, really decreasing our capacity to get ready for the on surge, really worked to ensure enough PPE. That was probably one of the most scariest things early on, just simply not enough. You know, you go from a small utilization to exponential overnight, and it really challenges the supply chain. So LifeBridge looked at innovative things like making our own gowns, isolation gowns, and face shields and face masks, just trying to do anything to get ahead of it. And, you know, the other thing that was amazing is being able to work with our other hospital health systems. You know, there was no playbook for how to do this, and that really rattled all the caregivers. You know, we're used to knowing exactly what treatment protocols are and how to execute on them. This was unsettling. And so the best thing we did is come together as a total health system to understand how were we each going to attack this and what lessons learned could we get from others. And that gave us a bit of comfort. I think that's one of the most gratifying things, that we were able to come together as a healthcare community and share across health systems and learn from one another.
We talk about educating the public, certainly in the beginning of this. We talk about Maryland doing a good job. Part of this was, we wear masks here. I mean, lots of places around the country where that wasn't happening and people were fighting that element of it. Part of that was the educational part of having people to work in your hospitals and understanding the safety that's necessary for all of us so that we can get to this point where vaccines are being distributed. And this, you know, this will be a good news segment on that part of this, right? Because we are starting to see some light on the other end because we did a good job handling this.
Right. It's really true. You know, early efforts around staying at home, closing things down, wearing our masks, social distancing, washing our hands. Some of those things felt controversial early on, but I believe they were key to our success. And sticking with them really helped us manage it most effectively. And now the vaccines, oh my gosh, they truly are a light at the end of the tunnel. We're just thrilled to be part of making that happen.
Well, let's jump right there then, and let's start with you, and we'll go to Bob. But let's talk about vaccines. So many issues related to the vaccines. Let's start with one that I'm reading about, and that is that hospital employees themselves, in many cases, are being reluctant to take the vaccine. So I start right in. I guess I say, is that accurate? If so, what responsibility do the two of you feel for trying to begin to address that issue? Because I think that would get people's attention.
Well, it's a really good question. And so I'm a nurse by background, and so I can relate to this very well. I remember when flu shots first became mandatory, and there was a lot of concern about that, right? This is a brand new vaccine, and it takes a while for people to get comfortable with it. You know, people have their own personal opinions and thoughts about the vaccine. I will tell you, early LifeBridge has had a great percentage of people taking advantage of the vaccine. I would say initially about 60% of our staff and physicians said yes. But you know what? There's another wave now that most of us have gotten our second shot and we live to tell about it. There's a new wave of people that said, okay, I'm ready now. right? So I think it's all about education, letting people know that the side effects are very minimum, that the studies were good. Hey, these studies, some of them had more people enrolled in them than other studies in the past. So even though it seems fast,
it was good. What gives you confidence in that? Why do you have the confidence in it?
I have the confidence because I've seen the results of the study. I've seen that more people are enrolled than in traditional ones. And you know what? Here's the bottom line. Any side effects that I could possibly get from the vaccine are much less than the devastation I've seen from COVID itself. So you know what? This ICU nurse put her arm up and said, let's go. Right.
Well, in the case of that, and Don's had his shot, and my wife's getting her shot this weekend, and we're all lining up for inside of your institutions, you know, all of everything you're doing in life. You said 60%. The other 40%, is this something where there will be physicians and people in the medical space who do not get the shot?
There might be, but as I said, now we're up to about 75%. So as people are seeing that everything's okay and that it's safe and people are doing well, then I think you have more people getting on the bus to get the shot. You know, I do think other vaccines like J&J coming on the market are also positive. That's one shot. And so maybe there's folks that will say, I'll take one shot. I don't want two.
I'm a sissy. I'm better with one than two, for sure. No doubt about it.
That's right.
Bob, as president, I love this topic that Leslie's diving into there. As president of the Maryland Hospital Association, do you all play a role in trying to address what is understandably a historic reluctance on the part of communities of color to be vaccinated? And we know all of the early data that we're seeing so far shows a disproportionate amount of white Americans being vaccinated. Does your association get involved in that issue and try to make some headway and try to assure communities of color that it's okay?
So we do. Maybe not in terms of our direct engagement with the public, but for instance, we've been running webinars with an expert on health equity physician from here in Maryland who has been teaching hospital people how to overcome this vaccine hesitancy that is evident in communities of color. So these webinars have been attended by something on the order of 200 plus hospital leaders, and so they can educate their coworkers and the members of the public. That's just one example, but you know, we're continuing to work with folks in the legislature. Leslie is the chair of our Council on Legislative Matters, and you know, we talk to legislators about how, particularly ones who represent underrepresented communities, and try to get the word out that the vaccines are safe and effective. You know, you think about it, every one of these vaccines is far more effective than the annual flu vaccines. Flu vaccines are about 50% effective in preventing serious consequences of flu. You know, and 35,000 people a year in this country die just in a normal flu season from flu. So, these are really remarkable products. Sure, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine has a lower efficacy in a raw percentage than the Pfizer and Moderna products, but it's really very good. It's very, very effective at preventing severe disease, death, hospitalization. So, you know, everybody's saying if you get access to a vaccine, get the shot, don't worry about which brand it is. It's going to help society, get the herd immunity, and move on.
If you just joined us, I want to do a little reset here. Don Moeller, former Baltimore County Executive, is here with us, along with Bob Atlas, President and CEO of the Maryland Hospital Association, back together again, and Leslie Simmons from LifeBridge Health. And I said Carroll Hospital, a long time at Carroll Hospital, now the Executive Vice President of all things at LifeBridge Health. Go ahead, Don.
No, I was going to say, I was so glad that, Bob, you brought up the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, because I've talked with Nestor before. I think the communication on the Johnson & Johnson vaccine has really been problematic. And I don't like to criticize my friends in the media. They're not fake news. I actually believe the news. I believe there are facts. But they got focused, as you said, on the efficacy rate versus the most important number, which was the 100%. It was 100% effective in preventing hospitalizations and death. So you look at that and go, oh, 100%, I'm not going to the hospital. I'm not going to die. Yeah, so put me in, coach, right? I mean, that. So I think that's the number that folks have to focus on. You also mentioned, Nestor said, a year ago, we were down in Annapolis. We were talking all things General Assembly. We've got the legislative leader here in Leslie. We've got you running the whole association, Bob. What's important for hospitals right now that's bubbling up down there in a General Assembly that looks quite different? What should folks be paying attention to legislatively over the next 60 days?
Well, a number of things. We're very concerned about health equity, and we're supporting a number of pieces of legislation that will promote improvements in that domain. We're concerned about the perpetuating telehealth. Telehealth's been around for quite a while, but it had a lot of restrictions on it, which were loosened to make it possible for people to access healthcare when they were restricted to be at home. And we want to make sure that that continues. You know, one of the things, insurers used to not pay for audio only, a phone call, because they felt there was potential for abuse. But, you know, we got a lot of people who don't have a broadband connection, don't have a video device. They need a standard phone call to get to their doctor. And we want to see that extended permanently with appropriate payment for it. And not least among our legislative needs is what we call the Healthcare Heroes Protection Act, which is meant to reduce exposure to liability for healthcare workers and institutions during and subsequent to a public health emergency such as we're in. You know, we can't have our caregivers delivering life-saving care with the threat of a lawsuit hanging over them. And this applies not just to COVID care, but to care that they're giving everybody, you know, that's impacted by COVID. You know, we had a lot of delays in procedures and treatments for non-COVID illnesses during the height of the pandemic. And that was not bad medical judgment at all. That was appropriate. And you know, people can't be worried that they're going to get sued because they did the right thing during an emergency.
Now, my guess is that our friends on the trial lawyer side of the aisle probably don't see that issue the same way you see it. Call me crazy. Am I right going out on a limb on that?
I'll let them speak for themselves.
Well, Leslie, what issues are you focused on down there as you're trying to educate lawmakers?
So, you know, I would say it's most of what Bob has said. I have to say that telehealth has been huge for us, and we would hate to go backwards. That really is a way for us to connect to patients that have a hard time getting access to offices, and we can get care to them quickly. So I love that. I would also have to say one of the things that we've enjoyed in the whole response to the COVID pandemic is an ability to innovate in a powerful way. And so it was absolutely a pure joy to be able to do things quickly without having to go through a lot of red tape to stand up things. And I hope we could learn from that it doesn't always have to take a long time to get the right things done. You know, certainly there's a burden of proof that is the right thing, but I'd like to see legislators look back to what we did during the pandemic and see if there's a way that we can stream things to get them to market, so to speak, quicker.
I know this is obviously taxed, you know, every facet of medicine. It's taxed our whole country. But a year into this, from your role as executive vice president at LifeBridge, this has been a paradigm shift, right? Like a game changer all the way around, just in telemedicine, as you talk about. What has come out of this a year later that makes a hospital stronger, a system stronger, all of it stronger?
So it's a great question, and I've thought about it a lot, and I have to tell you, the biggest lesson is we're better together. And I love it when we were able, I mean, this pandemic even brought the LifeBridge system of hospitals together in ways I could have never imagined. People just put aside their differences and focused on how do we get through this together? What's the best way? At using everybody's collective thinking and not just dependent on one institution to guide everything. And then being able to work across hospital systems throughout the state and beyond to learn from one another and not be so protective of the information.
That makes it better for everybody, right? That makes it better for every patient.
We were stronger together because of it. And I think that's a huge progress for us in the healthcare industry.
Bob, do you see that as well? I mean, dealing with all of these in the system?
Oh, sure. I mean, the word convene has been front and center for MHA. We have convened and convened and convened. We've convened our financial executives on how to deal with the financial implications. We've convened our vaccine experts and we were working with the state, on PPE shortages. We had almost daily meetings during the heat of it. Counting, making sure we were counting correctly, how many people were actually in the hospital with COVID. All of these things required sharing, getting together. And, we do that. We still do that multiple times a week to get everybody together. We have a weekly Thursday morning call with a couple of hundred hospital executives, and Health Secretary Schrader has been joining recent calls to tell us what the state has going on that we all need to know. And, information sharing is just, it is a tremendous help. And the competition between hospitals and frankly, between different kinds of provider groups has faded away, and everybody's really helping each other out.
Bob and Leslie, you all are out there. You're the faces of the organizations, so to speak. Nestor and I spoke with a couple of nurses, a respiratory therapist, and one of the questions we asked them elicited, for me, what was a pretty emotional response. We asked them how it felt to be on the front lines over the past year when millions of Americans made masks a political issue and millions wanted to suggest that somehow this whole thing was a hoax and that people weren't really dying. And Leslie, you just reacted much in the way they did as a nurse. You could see the pain on their face as they went in and tried to help people through the most horrific experience. Talk a little bit from your perspectives and your organizations, how it felt to be unexpectedly thrust into the middle of a political debate that I imagine you never thought would have been political.
Yeah, I got to say, it was heartbreaking. We see death every day and we wanted to just grab those people and bring them into the hospital, throw a mask on and say, look at this. This is real. This is not a political issue. This is real. I personally had my mother in intensive care and almost lost her. And so anytime, it's just so infuriating to a healthcare worker to hear somebody say it's a hoax, it's not real, we don't need to wear a mask. It's the most devastating thing. And so we try to channel that negative energy that we get from that to educate. Sometimes I think it's just ignorance. We don't like to see what's happening inside the hospital. And unless you're personally affected by somebody that got very sick with COVID, it's easy to say that's not real. This is nothing but a flu. This is no big deal. It's a very big deal. I've never in my 30-year career as a nurse seen anything as devastating as this.
No, it's your reaction. I mean, Nestor, I'm going to walk away after these interviews. That's going to be my takeaway. And Bob, I'm going to let you jump in as well on that because you represent all of the hospitals. But the emotion, I mean, Leslie came out of her chair. The nurses in our previous segment came out of their chairs and they were just like, they wanted to shake people. What? How did you try to address that, Bob?
Well, you know, we just tried to stick to the facts, the evidence. You know, in a way, we're fortunate here in Maryland because most people, you know, even though we do have some political divides here, I think most people got on board. You know, since my office shut down on March 13th last year, for the most part, and I've been working remotely mostly. I've spent some time on the Eastern Shore, which is, you know, a little different politically. And I would say, you know, I have not been anywhere where I don't see people wearing masks, face coverings where it's appropriate. So I think Marylanders got on board. And, you know, I spent a lot of time talking to my counterparts in all the other 50 states. And some of them are just frustrated as hell because, you know, the governors are acting like it's not real and that it's all a matter of personal responsibility, not a public health issue. I'm just so glad that I'm in Maryland where pretty much everybody gets it and wants to do the right thing.
Both of you being involved in hospitals, in and around hospitals, the vaccines have been a little different, right? I mean, the vaccines involve medical people, but this is going to involve stadium. And my wife's like, I'm going to walk over to the stadium to get my shot on Saturday. She's got an early morning appointment for her first shot. She's thinking maybe the Johnson & Johnson, made right here in Baltimore, right? Or manufactured in Baltimore, that maybe she'll get that. But for it to be outside of hospitals, and I live, full disclosure, these are real pictures taken in my place, but I live looking down, I'm literally looking down on the convention center right now, and I see orange cones on Charles Street out my window, and I see the people lining up. This was too big even for hospitals, right? For all of us to come to a hospital to get a shot, this is not within the framework of anything I've seen in 52 years on the planet, that the vaccine process for this country, while medical and while distributed by people, this has had to be bigger than coming out to Carroll Hospital. Correct, Leslie?
Yeah, this is going to take all of us, right? We want to make sure that there's multiple ways for people to get vaccines. So I'm really excited. The hospitals want to play a role and believe we can, but certainly they cannot do it alone. So I love the mass vac centers and the pharmacies and physician offices even, along with hospitals. We've got a lot of good work to do, but I'm really confident that anybody that wants a vaccine is going to get one. And certainly J&J coming into the market is going to help that tremendously.
Well, I'm going to push you on that. Bookmobile in Baltimore County. So we get the vaccine mobile.
Run the old bookmobile from my childhood.
Right. There are vaccination vans out there right now.
Yeah,
well, and we're going to talk to County Executive Oshevsky, who's doing some terrific things in Baltimore County, providing Uber rides for people who need them. My question for both of you, Nestor's a young guy, right? He's in his early 50s. When do we get to that point in Maryland where anybody who wants a shot can get a shot and not have to spend all day on five or six websites? When will that actually happen?
You know, I think, and certainly we'll see what Bob says, but I think we're at the cusp of that, right? I think the governor is trying to give us good prioritization and organization for how to give our most at-risk people the vaccines first. But with new, you know, vaccines coming on the market, that gives us a lot of options and we can move even quicker, right? So, you know, hopefully by the summer, we'll see a significant catch-up and have vaccinated a significant number of people.
Yeah, I think Leslie's right. You know, right now everybody's frantic who wants a vaccine trying to get in line. I haven't had my vaccine yet, even though I'm in an eligible category based on age. Hate to admit that.
Man, you're not gaming the system at all, Bob. I thought you'd have been first in line.
Bob doesn't want to be on the front page of the site.
I don't get in with patients, so I don't have that excuse or that reason. But you know, I think that we're going to go from serious scarcity to adequate supply within a matter of a few months. But you know, we just don't know. We're not here in Maryland. We're not in control of what the manufacturers produce and what the federal government decides to send to our state. So we're waiting patiently. We're glad to see, you know, Maryland's getting about 50,000 J&J doses this week to add to the Pfizer and Moderna. And Pfizer and Moderna supplies are growing as well. So we're very hopeful. And we think it'll be a matter of more supply than demand.
Boy, that is just great news. Nestor, I saw a recent number just came out that one of the most recent days, we actually got 2.3 million shots in the arm. So 2.3 million as opposed to the target of 1.5. So it appears we're gaining on it. Nestor, you always say you just like to learn things.
Here's what I'm going to say. My wife is diabetic, and we've been married 18 years, and I've watched her give herself needles all around her body. I've watched her fight leukemia. But Leslie, there was that point where you rolled the sleeve up and I got that RN whites in your eyes that you're getting me, you know, I'm a bit of a sissy, but I'm going to go through with this. But you got me going. So I appreciate that from a one patient to one RN. Bob, we really appreciate you always coming on to keep us educated. Please feel free to reach out to us anytime with more education. We almost didn't want to reach to y'all last year because it was just so stressful into the beginning of this. I'm glad things are settling down. We'd love to be more a part of educating everyone. Leslie, appreciate everything that you and the folks at LifeBridge do for us as well. And Neil Meltzer, give him my best as well. Bob, we'll check back in with you at the Maryland Hospital Association again soon.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. On behalf of former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller, who's been keeping me in line since 1982 and directing me out to Fadley's and out to our friends out in Catonsville at State Fair and the chicken and waffles and the shrimp and grits, masking up, washing our hands, and we're staying safe on behalf of the Maryland Hospital Association, our friends at KO. I am Nestor. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Baltimore positive.